Good evening, everyone. I want to say that it has been a pleasure for me to be here, my first time in Scotland. Had a little fun in England, and it's just been great. I'm preferring Scotland better than England. But I want to thank the gospel here for having me and for inviting me. Some of these slides that I have, the ones that I had got kind of mixed up and some of them lost. And so this is kind of a new batch that Gordon, I keep on calling him Jordan, but his name is not Jordan. So Gordon has helped out a lot. I want to thank him for that, and the Gillespie family for having me in their home, and Alex. He also has helped me in straightening out some of this mess that I was having with my computer. So thank you all, and thank you once again for having me here. And Scotland so far ranks up there in my book. So nice to be here. If we could open to, well, I don't know if you have your Bibles, but I will open to Matthew chapter 24. When I think of crisis and when I think of issues, politically and worldwide, this chapter always comes to mind. And for many who know about this chapter, they will know why. This chapter gives a brief summary of the things that will take place before the coming of Christ. And I just want to read a few verses, starting from verse 3. Chapter 24 of Matthew, verse 3. It says, "And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the signs of thy coming and of the end of the world? And Jesus answered and said unto them, Take heed that no man deceive you. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And there shall be famine and pestilence and earthquakes in diverse places. All these are the beginning of sorrow." I just want to stop there. I find it interesting that his disciples say just these few words towards the end of chapter 3, and of the end of the world. I mean, the sign of his coming I find more interesting, but that's another topic. But and of the end of the world. Now, Jesus did not go into the wars first, and kind of what's been taken to media, really worldwide, is what's been going on in Ukraine. But he first says, take heed that no man deceives you. I want to say that he would see this deception as a greater importance and perhaps wars and rumors of wars that are around the world. So the first thing he focuses on is deception. This is why I kind of thought of this title. Is it really political or is it spiritual? So the first thing we find that Jesus speaks about is deception. But he does bring out in verse 6, "And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass." It says, "For nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom." This has been happening ever since Jesus spoke these things. And many people even view these things as already have passed. Well, I don't know about all that. But I know what makes this time more unique And I just, if I can try to put it in a visual aspect, stuff like this. New technology. You know, we'll just say 100 years ago, not even going back to the times of Christ. But let's just say 100 years ago. 100 years ago, people in England or Scotland would not know what would be going on in Ukraine. People in Canada, there's a gentleman that I communicate through Skype in Canada. He comes also to Ukraine. He's telling me what's going on in Ukraine when I'm in Ukraine. he lives in Canada. So, you know, this has gone a long ways. I'm raising my phone. And this type of technology, I believe, is making these things real around the world. You know, it says rumors of wars. So, I mean, does your country need to be in war to fit this category? Not at all. It says rumors of wars. You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. So it doesn't have to be in your own land. But you know how it is sometimes when you watch the television, if you have a television, or you hear the news on the radio, or somebody talks about issues that are happening, you know, it starts to get a little depressing. And a lot of people just, they don't choose to watch the news anymore. They even get rid of the TV as a result of not watching the news and what's happening worldwide. Because it says here also in verse 8, all these are the beginning of sorrow. You can understand maybe some of the reasons why people wouldn't want to watch these things. But here we have now this crisis that we're about to just briefly go through before we talk about the Lord's work in Ukraine. I guess I should stay here, right? In Ukraine, you have an issue taking place where Crimea has been invaded by Russia. There's a long history to this. There has been a protest prior to all of this, and I'll show you some of the photos. Ukraine was up for a vote to join the EU. Most of the people, probably throughout Ukraine, but definitely West Ukraine, wanted to be part of this union with the EU. And there wasn't protest yet at the beginning of this. It was saying, they were voicing to join the EU because the president of Ukraine was delaying his response to this issue of joining the EU. Well, once in Ivano-Frankivsk, there was a lot of protest around the government building and around other places in town. Police would be protecting the building, and the protesters at first wanted to join the EU. That was the issue. Well, once that was no longer the issue, it was a sad thing for them. Then the protesters grew to just wanting change. Okay, this is no longer in our future. We need change. And so the protest switched from joining the EU to changes, just plain changes. Most of this took place. This would be a photo of Kiev. And most of the issues took place in Kiev. This is where laws are made, the government is there, that affects the rest of Ukraine. So a lot of the protesters went to Kiev. They had from Ivano-Frankivsk to Kiev, it's about a 12-hour drive, bus drive. They were busing people from Ivano-Frankivsk to Kiev. Somebody had sponsored $50,000 for the payment for anyone to come free of charge to take them to Kiev to support the protest. And so this is how much they took the people from Lviv as well, and other places around the west of Ukraine, was sending people to Kiev to support the protests, to continue there. And there's people that I know personally who have went to Ukraine or to Kiev for 2 weeks, slept in their tents outside of the government building, and wanted to support this whole project. It took a bad turn after a while. This went on for about maybe 2 months or so, and then it started to get a little more violent. And buses were being turned over, tires were being burnt. The government, the armed forces were brought in. They were there first to protect, and then they started to respond to some of the protesters with beatings and so on and so forth. It took this route because along with the protesters came militia groups. And these militia groups, well, they have a different agenda than the protesters. And they were the ones that made the cocktail bombs and did a lot of other things. And it kind of went sour from when it got to this stage. The government responded. They were grabbing protesters. Some of the protesters disappeared for weeks, and they say they were interrogated and beat up when they came back on news. But you know, some of the officers also were beat up when they ended up being alone. It was just a bad atmosphere all the way through, and that continued. These were some of the fires that happened along the lines, and now both sides, from the armed forces, were throwing fire bombs, and the protesters were throwing fire bombs. So it was just going back and forth like this. And this is one of the scenes you see here. It got really bad when they started burning tires and things like that, and the pollution. So they started to wear masks. Police force had masks on, and some of the protesters got a hold of some of these masks, and they were also wearing the mask. And that was really devastating. It just ruined this area of Kiev, as you can see some of these photos. Here, the top photo is how Kiev looked, this area of Kiev. And I don't know if you can see some of the bottom. It's just all black with smoke. Buildings are burned, and it really went not good at all. Well, what ended up happening? The government, the president fled, and there was a celebration of some sort because the protest was somewhat successful in their eyes. Well, this is when some of the more populated area that had Russians, and one of them was the Crimea, was saying, well, we need help because now they're going to come here. And I'm not quite sure if this is exactly how it went, but just from hearing some of these reports, the Russians sent their army into the Crimea, claiming they're sending them to protect their, you know, the Russians that live there. And I'm sure they were looking for an opportunity to do just what they did. So in Crimea, you have Russian troops just lined up throughout the streets. Just another street, they're just there waiting for the next command. There was no fighting back from the Ukrainian army. At one point, there was a standoff between the Ukrainian army and the Russian army. The Ukrainian army was never commanded to fire or to attack. The Russian army said to put down your weapons, and the Ukrainian army put down their weapons. And even this past week, they took over some air bases, and the Ukrainian army was just packing up their things, going further into Ukraine, just because now it's no longer part of Ukraine, so it looks this way. You can see where the Crimea is at. Is it the button? And this area here, that's the Crimea. This is a during their elections, this is how they voted. So this was 2010. But this is a good graphic picture of the difference between this would be considered East Ukraine, and then this part would be considered West Ukraine. It's actually probably more, well, including Kiev, more this way, but this whole area, anyway, would be considered the West Ukraine. This is the divide that is now. It's similar to this. It may not be exactly to this, but you see this red mark here. It's similar to this. But this is where the Crimea is at, and this is now where the Russian army is. And here, this Donetsk, this is, they have a city here that's called the same, Donetsk. And they're also asking for Russia to come in, and this just very well may happen. So you have this area asking for Russia to come in. You have the Crimea where Russia has already entered and their army is already there. And then you have this area here. This is Odessa. In the United States, we have states that separate other states that divide the country. Here they call these oblasts. And this is one of the oblasts of Ukraine. And this is Odessa, is an oblast, is a state. And then here's the city of Odessa. But they are also asking Russia to come in. So, you know, we don't know how Ukraine will look tomorrow because every day it's changing. I just got a report saying that Russia called, I think it was over 100,000 troops to the Ukrainian border. And in Ukraine, they are calling the reserves. There is a young man in the Lviv assembly who has been called into the reserves, but he happens to be in Ivano-Frankivsk, where we are, and he's helping out with what we do there at the moment. So they told him, when they found out that he wasn't in Lviv, they just told him, okay, just stay, we'll call you back later. So he hasn't been called in yet, but this is to the extent that it has taken to, that everybody is now being called in, and the tension is everybody's worried about the war. Some of the reports that I've been getting is that the streets are quiet, not so many people out. West Ukraine, again, is considered this area. This is the area where we have been mostly, in this area. So it's pretty far from Kiev or from the Crimea. So we're not experiencing the violence or anything in this side where we are at. But there is a feel throughout just the city of worry, of concern, of what's going to happen. They don't know. Even right now, the EU has rushed to sign some documents with, I guess you can consider it the West, with the West part of Ukraine, to try to support it. And Russia, again, is moving in from the Crimea in this area, and we don't know how much further they're going to go. So if anything happens, it's going to be really an east against west once again, where Ukraine is directly in the middle of it all. These are some of the things that have been taking place in Ukraine. Again, been taking the news. We don't know what Ukraine will be tomorrow. So it does need prayers. There are Christians there that are affected by this. A business is slow in some areas, and there's a few Christians we know that they have businesses, and they feel the impact of the whole situation. So it would need prayer much about politically that the Christians there will find comfort, because they also are experiencing the worries and the effect of such a crisis. This is the color of their flag. The top of this flag resembles the sky, the color for the sky. The bottom is wheat, so you have sky and wheat. And one of the things that Ukraine is known for is for their soil. It has a reputation of being the breadbasket of Europe. And you can see that they recognize this even by their own colors that they put on their flags. I would like to turn to another passage. If we can go to Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10, Luke chapter 9. Just want to read from verse 1. Luke chapter 9, verse 1. It says, "Then he called his 12 disciples together and gave them power and authority over all devils and to cure diseases. And he sent them to preach the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. And he said unto them, Take nothing for yourself for your journey, neither staffs nor scrip, neither bread, neither money, neither have two coats apiece. And whatsoever house ye enter into, there abide, and thence depart. And whosoever will not receive you when ye go out of that city, shake off every dust from your feet for a testimony against them. And they departed and went through the towns, preaching the gospel and healing everywhere." I just want to stop there. Now we're looking at the beginning of Jesus' mission. Now he's sending other people to do what actually he has been doing up to this point. We see first that it was he, in verse 1, it says, then he called his 12 disciples. So he called them. And then in verse 2, it says, and he sent them to preach the kingdom of heaven. He sent them. And then we read, and in verse 3, it says, and he said unto them, take nothing for your journey. So we see that Jesus Christ was the organizer and was in charge of this mission that he is sending his people out. He's the one that called, he's the one that sent, and he's the one that said. It was all about him. It is his mission, and he took control, and he sent them out. Now, one thing that I find interesting, we see in verse 1, it says, and he gave them power over all devils and to cure diseases. And then in verse 2, it says, and he sent them to preach the kingdom of God and to heal sickness. And then if we jump down to verse 6, it says that they went to town to town preaching the gospel and healing everywhere. You know, there's many charity groups, many organizations that do an excellent job in reaching people's need. But there's a different pattern that we find here that with Christ sending them. Because he sends them first and he puts an order. In verse 1, he gives them powers over devils, spiritual. And then to heal diseases, physical. In verse 2, he sends them to preach the gospel, spiritual, and to heal, physical. And then in verse 6, we see what they did is they preached spiritual and they healed, spiritual and they healed physical. So we see a different pattern that God stresses in his mission. Primarily, his focus is spiritual. Then comes the spiritual. Then comes the physical. And I want to say that this pattern we find throughout the scriptures, but it works beautiful when it's in order. It's a beautiful working pattern when it is in order. What often happens with charity groups, with organizations, is they do a good job, because I'm not going to say anything bad about good works. You cannot. It's good to do good. And I want to encourage everyone here, please do good. Be nice. Help out your fellow man. There's nothing wrong with that. It's encouraged. But when we find this mission in particular, Jesus puts the spiritual first. And then he adds the spiritual. When it's in the reverse, what normally happens, because there's some very good charity groups that focuses on the physical, and that's it. They do good, but that's all they get. How long will that last them? Okay, let's just say somebody has an illness or something like this, and they get good help and support from some organization. This is great. How long will that last? Well, they probably have a good enough support to last them the rest of their life. So that means it's only going to last up to their lifespan. That's it. His focus, it goes beyond the lifespan and reaching the physical, the spiritual first, and then bringing in the spiritual next. This is one of the things that attracted me to Ukraine. Some of the things that I saw there, I saw this beautiful combination of word and deed, meaning the word of God, preaching the gospel, and deed, reaching out and helping the needs of the people. I saw it played out really well with the people I went with, and it just impressed me so much that when I had another opportunity to go, I said, yeah, what, this is a no-brainer. It was a no-brainer to me because I enjoyed to see this pattern working together in such a unique way. And to see it actually work impressed me. So I want to start with showing you some of the things that we do there in Ukraine. This is another map of Ukraine. Forget these two lines that's going across Ukraine, but this line right here, this is where Ivano-Frankivsk Oblast or state or county, I'm not sure how it's called here, but this is called in Ukraine an oblast. And this is the oblast of Ivano-Frankivsk. The work that we do is all in this oblast. We stay in the Ivano-Frankivsk area. We travel many times, 2 hours or 3 hours, to an orphanage, to a school, or something like this. Ukraine's big. This oblast is pretty big as well. We often go to a school. You'll see it later in the slides. That is near the Romanian border. I'm going to think it's somewhere in this area right here. And it's about an hour or two to the border. And here you'd find... Where's Romania? Yeah, here's... This green part is... Where's Romania? Oh, this is Romania, here. So it's close to the Romanian border. Here is Lviv. Lviv also has an assembly in it. And then here is Lutsk, or the town is called Lutsk. And here is also another assembly. Our work here in Ivano-Frankivsk is still a gospel work. and we're reaching out to the community and still preaching the gospel there to them. I have to bring in Flo Cancier. She is, I don't know if anybody have heard of her, but Flo is a Canadian woman. She was born and raised in Canada. People just think she's Ukrainian. But her husband was Ukrainian, and he died. And when he died, it was soon after she got saved. And she started going to one of the halls out in Canada. And she had a desire to go to her family, and they were in Ukraine, in the city of Lviv, to share the gospel message to them. So she first went to Ukraine in the mid-90s with her son, and they tried to, she was able to speak Ukrainian, and she tried to reach to her relatives, and they also did some distribution, track distribution while they were there. Well, there was an interest that grew in Lviv, and she mentioned this to some of the brethren back in Canada, and they started to come, and things just grew from there. So this is the beginning of how the Canadians and some of the Americans started to go to Lviv, was because of Flo Cancier. And she was, I have to say, a great help. She was able to speak the language, and when we went with her, she can say things with the understanding that we wanted to be presented, which was very helpful. And she passed away, I'm going to think early last year of cancer. She was going to Ukraine for almost 15 years. She had two replaced hips. And she, at this age, I think she was 77 years old, but that never stopped her from wanting to come. She was sick when she was in Ukraine. She went home early, and a few months later, or actually probably less than a month later, she passed away. But she was a great help, and it was because of that effort, work, our focus came on to Lviv, and then it transferred to Ivano-Frankivsk. This is some of us. This man here, I'll start from the right. This is Louis Smith. Louis Smith is from the States. He's from Michigan. He was the one who asked me if I wanted to come with him to Ukraine. And I said I would. And this is where I saw this combination working beautifully. And well, I didn't think really I was ever going to come again. But the following year, he asked me again, would you like to come with me to Ukraine? And I said, well, why not? And at this point, that's when I stayed a little longer. And that continued even until now. This man here in the middle is Malcolm Stanley. Malcolm Stanley also been coming from the very beginning. He's from Canada. He lives in the Portage La Prairie area. Malcolm, actually all these men, Malcolm, I'll just give you this man's name too. His name is Howard Pratt, also from Canada. Malcolm, Howard, and Louis Smith, before coming to Ukraine, they all were going to Russia. And they started going to Russia in the early 90s. And when Russia changed some laws, it changed the freedom to go there and to continue preaching the gospel. And meanwhile, Flo was doing her thing in Ivano-Frankivsk, or in Lviv, and people were still going to Lviv. So once the doors started to close for Russia, they changed their focus to Ivano-Frankivsk, and then also to, they changed their focus to Lviv and also to Ivano-Frankivsk. And then this man here in, right here, this fella, his name is Edmund Johnston. He's from Northern Ireland. He is now a commended worker, and he is there in Lviv. They used to meet at Flo's, this is in Flo's apartment, and we had the assembly started, I think, three years ago, in the apartment, and it probably 2 years ago, they found a little place, and now they're meeting outside of the apartment. And after about maybe three or four years ago, Edmund Johnston came to Lviv and was a commended worker. This is the gathering in Lviv. I just wanted to show that because many of us, when we go to Ukraine, we fly into Lviv and we spend time with the saints there and help out with the work that they do there. It's similar work, visiting schools and orphanages and villages and homes and so on and so forth. So when we fly in, we always fly in through Lviv and spend sometimes a week, 2 weeks in Lviv before going to Ivano-Frankivsk. And this is here is the assembly there in Lviv. This is can't see it so good, but this is the apartment that we have in Ivano-Frankivsk. This is where we used to have our meetings just until a few months ago we changed venues. This is our apartment. We had our meetings here. This is the back of it. This is the kitchen area. Small little place. This is where we have our clothing. When boxes come in, we set up our clothing like this and other items we put in this room. It's the bedroom. It's just a two-room apartment. This is the bedroom area. There's also a bed, and we often sleep on cots. And this would be the second room. I just want to show you some of the sites of Ivano-Frankivsk. This is a Greek Catholic church. It's quite famous. There's two main churches in the center. One is a Greek Catholic and one is an Orthodox church. This is a Greek Catholic. I wanted to show you this one because this is the entrance here. If you can see this lady here on the bottom, this is a picture of, I think it's supposed to be Mary. And before she's going in, she's kissing the picture and she's walking in. They have a lot of things like this. They have they keep also in front of the church some ice things that if you touch it, it's supposed to help you somehow. And water they have where you see the priest, you know, pouring water in people's containers and they take it and supposed to have. So they have a lot of stuff like this that a lot of people are attracted to. And this is just one of them here, and she's kissing this photo for some reason. I'm not quite sure. Here's one of their parks. They have beautiful parks. Many times if you would see some of their homes, they're very small. One room most of the time, probably even the size of this platform, and you'll have two, three, four people living in a room like this, and most people just want to stay outside. So they have very, very nice parks. This is one of them that's near the apartment, and I often go to this park as well and just to enjoy the scenery. In this park also, you can see, I'm not sure if you can see this, here you have a big cross. I find this interesting because this will not be allowed in the States to have in a public area, a religious symbol, so to speak. But here they have a lot of them in public areas, and I just find that pretty interesting. This is the center of town. This is an old building that is now used as a museum. In Ukraine, once a year, in Ivano-Frankivsk, once a year they have a blacksmith festival. And this is one of them. People from all over the world come to the festival. There's Germans, English people, American people, all over. And it's really popular. Every year they have it for about 3 days. And then they all go home and they set up like this. So this is just one of them working on something. They sell items like this at the festival. Sometimes they make it there and then they'll sell it to you there as well. This is one of the places we visit. It's a sanatorium. When you think of, I'm not sure how you think of sanatoriums, but most people think of sanatoriums as sick people and, you know, they can't get well. And this is really a sanatorium for sick people or for people who, children, this is a children's sanatorium, and for those who may need some rest. They may be sick or something like this, but, you know, if you go to the doctor and just say, you know, I'm really tired or whatever the case is, he'll write you a prescription to go to the sanatorium. Most of the kids that go to the sanatorium, they stay there for a month. They have a teacher on board, a few classes. This is all ages, really. And there's teachers there, and they teach the students while they're still there. But the idea is for the children to get rest and relaxation. So we come here. We come here every month, and every month is a new group of children. They come from all over Ukraine. It's interesting because some of the schools that I visit that are far from here, these kids remember me. And I'm thinking, wow, they must have been here last month when I was here. But they actually remember me from another school. And I think that's pretty cool that they can, I can't remember them, but they have a good memory. So here we're speaking to these kids, and you can see in the background these nurses. There's and there's also nurses in the back hallway here. And so when we're giving the message, all these kids are hearing it, and even the nurses that are there and the teachers. This is the director of the sanatorium. He often welcomes us. We have helped the sanatorium in bringing clothing and games, sheets. Many times they need just white sheets. They say the white sheets that they have, after 10 washes, they tear, they wear, and they always need white sheets, so we try to bring white sheets to them. He's showing me there's a museum area that they have at this sanatorium, and this photo, just by the way, this man standing here, his name is Sasha. He's my interpreter while I was there. He's showing me this is a slipper or a shoe in his hand. And it was made out of a tire. And he says during World War II, after World War II, they had nothing. And people made things from whatever they had. And this is one of the shoes that they would make out of a tire. And you can see the threading of the tire and things like that. And they put it all together. I thought it was actually, it might even last another 60 miles. But it was pretty clever the way they did this, made that shoe. This is the same sanatorium. We give, every time we visit, we have New Testaments, Bible texts, a Bible tract, and they all receive one, whoever wants one. We give them out, and this is one of the groups, and they often want to take pictures. Many times they want you to sign the Bibles, and we try to discourage that. One thing that's time-consuming, you'll have a long line just waiting. They'll sit and wait. These kids just want you to sign their Bibles. It's a nice thing, really, but it's just time-consuming. But here they are, happy to take a picture. They wanted a picture, so we said, okay, we'll take a picture. And I came, at this point, that's Malcolm Stanley, that's me. We came together, and this guy looks a little hungry, so I don't know. Maybe they didn't feed him that day. They wanted another picture. They wanted to chant USA, so we're there chanting USA. This is a school that's about maybe 40 minutes away from Ivano-Frankivsk, where we stay. And this is a school that, once again, they welcome us. We do the same thing here. This is the English teacher, right? Oops. This is the English teacher here. She's always eager to speak English when we go there, and she wants to talk to us. And just the other day also, the last time I was there, she was disappointed because her class didn't do well in the final exam. And she showed me the textbook, and she says, "Can you understand this?" And, you know, I had a little difficult time. She's like, "Well, if you can't understand it, how can my students understand?" And she was just so disappointed and so angry that the students didn't do well, but just upset that the textbooks and the materials are not there. And I said, "Well, You know, if I find any other things that they can learn, I'll try to bring them to her. But another place where we visit, and they welcome us, each school that we visit, we bring Bibles and texts and tracts, and we're able to give them out freely to them. Also clothing for the needy there. Sometimes they don't have the personnel to distribute the clothing, so they'll say, no, you know, we don't need any clothing. But we ask if they know any poor families and things like this, because they would know more than we in these towns. Some of them will say no, but not because there isn't any, but just simply because they don't have the personnel to distribute them. This is Eric Fowler, right here, and that's his wife. They are there actually right now. This was last year, so they're there right now in Ukraine, and they just had a series of gospel meetings for a week, and he said it went very well in Ivano-Frankivsk. But this is the same school, different class, but the same school. This is in Hrushka. Actually, this word Hrushka means pear. So in English, we just call this pear village. Well, that's actually what it says there. So this is Hrushka, pear village, another group of kids that we speak to. I was with Eric again at this time. This is also in Hrushka. They were having a national day of poetry. And so this town was gathering together at the town hall, and they were reading poetry and singing. Well, the mayor called me and said, well, if I wanted to come over, that after they're done, we can have a message for the town people. And I said, yeah, that's great. So we went there. It looks very dark on my end. Is it also dark? You can't lighten it? Okay. So here I'm there with Louis Smith, and this was our interpreter, Svetlana. It was really cold. This is the only heater they had, so they're just warming themselves up by the heater. Afterwards, we had a good word with them. Both Louis and I would speak. After this particular time, some folks came up to us and were asking about, you know, what is it that you believe and things like this, and they were saying, well, we believe the same thing, and we're, you know, it's really good. And they said, well, would you come and preach at our church? And we're like, do you have a church? And they're like, yeah, it's being built. I mean, it's right next door, but it's the Greek Catholic Church. I said, oh, really? I said, okay, well, I'll let Louis handle this one, and we'll just take it from there. This is a school orphanage, which, and it's in the town of Bukovina. That's the principal there, and I was with Malcolm Smith here, or Malcolm Stanley. This school, it's a big school, 450 students, and here there's a little conflict. It's in a prime area. It's in the mountains, again, beautiful scenery all around. They want to use this area for a ski resort. And so, I don't know, somebody has some political power, and no one is helping the school to continue. So we visit the school often and seek to help out the school when and where we can. This is all the teachers, maybe not all, but the teachers that were there at the school at the time we went. Again, here's Malcolm Stanley. This is the principal, and all of these would be the teachers. What Malcolm had a desire to do, Malcolm in Canada ran a Christian school for a number of years. It was a private school. Under 100 students he had, but he ran it for a number of years. So he had a desire to talk to these teachers and encourage them. And he had, this book that she's carrying, it's a teaching book, but based on Christian principles and Christian stories. and he just wanted to encourage the teachers to focus, keep this as their focus, and how to reach them with the gospel message. Now, we know that not all of them would be believers, but they're in that position where they will have influence on the students. So he wanted to encourage them in that way. And I thought it was really great that he had a desire for that. This is some of the area around Bukovina. As you can see, this is winter season, of course, but it's a really beautiful, it's known for like 20 minutes away, it has one of the most popular ski resort in all of Ukraine. So this is a desirable area, and one that businessmen can see riches coming from it and investments. This is inside. When we speak to the students, we have an auditorium, and many of them come. Our last visit, we had way too many students. It was over 300, and things just got out of control. Normally, we get about 100 or slightly more, but 300 was much more than what we can handle, and it gets a little harder that way. For a school of 450 students, this is their washroom. This is what all the students used. This is the outside of it, and that is the inside. And that's just one of them. Not very pleasant. Well, also, the neighbors didn't think it was pleasant. Also, they would complain from time to time about this situation. And so Malcolm wanted to find out what they can do to help. So we were talking about maybe building an extension to the main building and adding two washrooms there. And that was the thought for some time until the director mentioned, they had two spare rooms that they didn't use, that maybe we can do something with that. So we took a look into that, and we were able to do something with that. And this is the women's washroom. And that's the toilets that they use. This is the men's washroom. And these toilets, it's not the women get those and the men get these. The women have one toilet like this, and the men have one toilet, and these are for the teachers. They didn't want to put these for the students because they end up breaking the toilet seat and just knocking the whole thing over. So these have a key, so you can only get in there through a key, and that's for the teachers. The other ones are for the students. And again, these lockers, they made these walls. And these are some of the students there. This actually group were singing to us. Just waving high. We also had some summer work. This is one of the schools that we visit, one of the closest to Ivano-Frankivsk. It's only probably a 20-minute drive. Another big school, 450 or more. They invited me to come to have some kind of summer event with them. So I try to come up with some games and things like this, and this is some of the things that we did. After each game we did, we had a little time where we had a little gospel message. They listened well. They played well. I personally had a good time with them, and I'm hoping to do something like that when I'm going back there. This is another outreach work that we did. I had a couple coming from Iowa, Scott and Kim. And I mentioned to them about starting some kind of children's work in the parks. Now, what they have these high-rises, or I don't know if you want to call them high-rises, but these buildings, these are all apartment buildings. So all around you have apartment buildings, and then you have a courtyard in the middle. And this is the courtyard that's in the middle of these apartment buildings. We used to call this one in particular Mars Hill, because this is where we played with the kids. So we attracted them to this area here, And once we got a number of kids, then we, he's throwing the frisbee, there's a little frisbee up here. Once we got a number of kids, we started to have some meetings. And they just came and sat. This is actually a John 3:16 verse that they're going through there, and they're all sitting down. Another view. When we first started going there, we would give, again, Bible tracts and Bibles for all the kids who wanted it, and they just grabbed it at any chance you gave them. We didn't do this all the time, because once they had it, they had it. New kids came, we give it to new kids. But this was something for them to have. They're all sitting on the carpet here. And it was interesting, because we'll have a game. We'll play with them, with frisbee, football, or things like that. And then I'll go back and I'll get the carpet. And then when I put the carpet out, it's almost like a magic carpet. All the kids just started coming, running to the carpet. And this is when we started our meeting to speak to the kids. This is Scott here. And his wife is probably one of them taking a picture. This is the men's home. The men's home have... it's a mentally ill home for men. And we speak to the staff here, and then here is the staff, and this is the director of the men's home. We often speak to him first in his office, and then we go there and speak to the staff. We bring wheelchairs to them, because they're always in need of wheelchairs. Folks send wheelchair from Canada or the States, and they're oftentimes in need of wheelchairs and medical things like this. That's us more talking. That's some of the people there. This is the boys' home, and it operates the same way, like the men's home. And we also visit them. This is the director of the men's home. And they do a little different work. They have more activities for the boys. They're involved in things. These are some of the things that the boys do. They make crafts like this. These are actually the brooms that they use. They make them there, and then they sell them. And there's other things that they do. They have like other types of animals that they raise there, and then they sell them, and things like that, just to keep funding. Oftentimes we come here with cleaning supplies for laundry, for cleaning the carpet, or mopping the floors. And this is us again speaking to the staff here. And that's just some of them there. This is us at the market. We're buying some slippers for a boys' home, or actually it's just an orphanage. This is the orphanage that we visited. They needed help with slippers. This is another orphanage that's in the same town of Ivano-Frankivsk. It's not too big. It's about 20 or 30 kids. They're working out something so they can keep the kids for 3 months, and they're working out something so they can have them for 9 months. And so these kids, there's new kids that come frequently to this one. So we try to make a frequent visit. This is another orphanage in Yablonev. Yablonev means apple, and so we call this one Apple Village, but you pronounce it Yablonev. This is the director of that. These are seeds that we come and we bring them so they can plant the seeds. These are some of the things that they do in Yablonev. Again, another place where they make craft, they do these knittings, some of the work that they do. Really nice work. They make these types of traditional shirts that they wear. This is in the auditorium and the kids that we speak to then. This is Howard Pratt. Howard has some little granddaughters, and grandchildren. And they gave from their own allowance to buy some balls to give to these children. So Howard said he wanted a picture to show them that he delivered the message and the gift from his granddaughter. This is a maternity hospital that we visit in Ivano-Frankivsk, in the town that we live. We have to dress like this. We have to wear also something over our shoes. What we were doing is we visit the parents and the newborn baby. Some of them are just a few hours old, and some of them are a day old. And we have packages. She's holding one package right here. And in the package would be just a blanket, a Bible, a text, some Pampers, and things like this for the little one. And he probably looks like he's one minute old. Some of the young ones there. Hope this will help. This is another hospital that we visited. The refrigerator ran out or broke on them, and they had nothing, and they had to store medication and test results, and they were in a desperate situation. So we were able to go there and help them out, picking up this refrigerator for them. This is a nursing home that's in between Ivano-Frankivsk and Lviv. Here I also gave out these Bibles, and you see this lady there reading the Bible that was given. They needed also a wheelchair, and I was able to, we had a wheelchair at the time, and was able to get it. This is a sign that they put up everywhere. It's. I'm not sure if it's too much of a joke, but here it says, this word is ni, meaning no. So this is, do not take toilet paper, do not take the toilet. Only dog. So it's just letting them know what the purpose of these things are. This is the meetings that we used to have in the apartment, and this is basically how it looked. These things back here on the walls are the names of the Bible in Ukrainian, and this is a two-way chart, but in Ukrainian as well. And that's again Louis Smith and Svetlana, the interpreter. Another meeting in the winter time. You can see how it got a little crowded. We switched venues, and now we're renting a place. And this is one of the places that we speak now. We just thought that the change was better. This is another room. It's kind of like a hotel place that we rent. But we wanted it to be open more to the public, because the idea that it was a little bit too exclusive. And, you know, if you had the rights to go in, you can go in if you did. And it was open to the public. And that's what we want these gospel meetings to be, open to the public. So we figured to have more of that feel. We'll rent an apartment or a room at a hotel and invite people this way to come to the hotel rather than to an apartment. Midweek, I also have a invitation-only meeting. This is the beginning of it. We haven't started. But I pick a topic, and that's Sasha. He's going to be my interpreter. We go through some of the material. Sasha's also learning a little bit about some of these, you know, vocabulary words and so on and so forth. So we get together early on to go through some of these things, and we invite people to come, and then people come, and then we just speak on the topic. I have a board here, and I just write like the topics and write a few points of the topic, and then we continue that. Most of the people who come to these meetings, it's not just a small handful, but most of them who come to these meetings know some English or want to learn English. They're more younger, and it's really a good time to reach out to that crowd, that generation, because a lot of people that do come to our gospel meetings are from an older generation, and we're glad that they come. But there's a big gap that we're missing, because there's few younger generation coming. So this meeting, I'm hoping, will develop into one of those things. This is an Ivano-Frankivsk prison work that we were doing. Someone took, one of the men took this photo. When you go into these prisons, you can't carry any electronic devices. Everything has to be taken out of your pockets. So the man that we go with, he works for the prison. He was able to take my camera, and he took some of these photos by visiting these inmates. And here also I give them Bibles, New Testaments actually, and Bible texts. This is another prison that we visit.
This time I came with, this is another interpreter named Terrace. He speaks English pretty well, but again, we have to go through Bible verses and things like this just so he can get the hang of it. This is some of the inmates who came to hear the message. Afterwards, we had a good talk. They had questions about, you know, about salvation, about this part of the Bible, that part of the Bible. They wanted us to come again, but things have changed and laws have changed, and it has limited us at this point to continue going to the prisons. This is a church that's on the prison ground that the prisoners have built. So this church was built by the inmates, and all the artwork inside were done by the inmates. And I just thought it was very impressive. Really good work. This is some of the personal outreach that we try to do. We get food and we package them up and we go to homes and give them, this is three families here we visited, and we gave them some packaged foods, and also we give them a New Testament and Bible text. Visit homes where people live and just trying to encourage them. They actually come to the meetings, so we're visiting them. This man was losing his eyesight and he needed some help because he needed an operation, and we were able to help him out there as well. Her name is Alessa, and this is where her husband and her child live. This is the whole house. This is where they live. There's nowhere to sit, and you just sit right there, and that's it. Another home visit that we're visiting, this lady whose husband died. Since her husband died, she has restricted herself from coming out, and we're just trying to encourage her. This woman here has MS, and we've been visiting her for many years just to encourage her. I believe she is a believer, and we just still try to encourage her and try to bring the gospel even to her mother. This is this woman here. She is in the assembly, and that's her son. And these are seeds that we gave them the season before, and this is what they got out of it. And I just thought that was really interesting that it grew so well that year. This is at a gypsy camp. There's many gypsies in Ukraine, but we've been looking for one in the Ivano-Frankivsk area, and we found a gypsy camp a few years ago. And so that's Louis Smith speaking to them inside their tent. This is how the outside looks. Next to this, it's a garbage dump. I mean, it's like literally right next there. They focus on things like this because they know not many people will come to this area, so they don't want to be disturbed, so they'll focus on locations like that. But this is how they live, and even children like this are in that environment. So we brought some clothing for them and presented the gospel, and we try to make more visits to them. That's the last of my slides. Just want to open up really quick if anybody had any questions that maybe I didn't cover or maybe that left you with some thoughts.
Daniel, you're focused on one area of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. How would the gospel be reaching other parts of it?
Yeah, I have wondered about this. You know, a lot of people say, one village we went to, I went to with the interpreter. When I say at this time, this interpreter wasn't saved, but she's saved now. She got saved last year. But at this time, she wasn't saved. We went to this one village. The mayor said to come. We went there. Nobody was there. We called. The mayor started arguing with us and said we need to talk to the priest. So we ended up talking to the priest, was not welcoming at all, and he says, why don't you go somewhere where the gospel is not preached? That's what he said to me. I said, I knew why. I said, because people here do not know their Bibles. And he was surprised that I said this. But He was thinking East Ukraine. That's what he's thinking. How would the gospel be received in East Ukraine? I'm not sure. I don't know. I believe it would be received. That's my notion. And who knows? It might even be received even better than West Ukraine. I don't know this part. But I do have something in me tells me that it would be received quite well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The reception you get seems to be very strong. You're going around all sorts of different places, public institutions, schools, and so on. And you're getting what looks like, this is the first I've heard of this talk, free access, easy access to them.
I'm the same way. I find it. I'm still, after going there for a few years, it still surprises me. In many of these schools, they have a Christian ethic class. So when we drive by a school and introduce ourselves to a school and talk to the principal and say, we would like an opportunity to speak to the children, we bring New Testaments with us. We tell them what we're doing, why we're doing it, where we got these New Testaments. We show them all the literature we have. They make a decision. And many times they think, well, we can have two classes, Christian ethics and English. Perfect match. So they invite us, come. One school in particular I'm thinking about, it's a large school, one of the largest in the Oblast. It's a large school, so I know they have poor people. But we asked if they needed any clothing, and he said, no, we don't need anything, just come. I like this response. This is not a bad thing. This is a good response because they want us to come. Well, they focus on English. So my last visit there, we didn't speak at an auditorium. We went from classroom to classroom to classroom to classroom, and it was 3 hours straight. I mean, I was exhausted at the end, but it was fulfilling. And I said, this is good. So they view it this way as bringing the combination. And sometimes they just say, well, yeah, we're all Christians. So why not? Come. And that's one of their mentalities as well. Some of the schools do need help. And when they invite us, then we mention, well, we have some clothing if you would like some clothing. One school we went to just in my last trip, we had clothing with us. We went there, we spoke, and we said, well, the principal had to leave. She took us to the cafeteria to get something to eat, but she had to leave. And I said, well, we still have clothing. And she was surprised. She's like, oh, you have clothing. But we confirmed this with her before we left, but she must have forgot. And she says, wow, this is great. You're doing two great works. And she said, yes, we need them. Thank you for bringing them. So the school in Vukovina, I can't even pronounce it right, but they need help. And there's no funding coming from the government. There's no funding coming from anywhere else. They have told us that we have helped them more than their government and more than their own businesses. And they have been very thankful. And this is the one where we helped them with the washrooms and things like that. So one of the things is that they welcome the message because it's a friendly thing. And they also, knowing that we're foreigners, they're a little happy that, if we can help out, that's great. So.
And is the government of Ukraine happy with, quote, foreigners?
No, I don't think so. We try to get a humanitarian aid visa to Ukraine. That's like the Iron Curtain, and even getting any type of visa is difficult for foreigners. But one of the reasons why I believe that they discourage this is if you are helping out a town or a group of people or having this type of reaching out to them, who's going to have the greater influence, the government or you? You know, we often understand that we're doing what the government should be doing. We're not doing anything really. I mean, we're just helping out, you know, reaching out. It's pretty much common with some of these other countries in the States. The charities do this work, not the government. You know, I'm sure here the same thing. But over there, they don't have any charity to do a work like this of their own, and the government helps very little to none. This is why there's a mentality of always wanting to leave Ukraine. They like Ukraine, but they know that their government cares nothing for them, and they're never going to get anything from any type of benefit or help from their government. So they're always seeking to move out to live their lives.
Daniel, just before you go any further, I think maybe time-wise there's some folk maybe need to get away, so maybe we could, there's a cup of tea, so maybe we could ask you some more questions.
Oh, great, great. Yeah, that's fine. Should I close in prayer? Okay. Father, we do thank thee for thy kindness and for even this assembly and